Hey folks, this is Scotty Roberts here with Intrepid Radio, and we are on the Exodus Reality Adventure, and this is day 6 and segment 6 of the Exodus Reality Adventure, and I'm here with Dr. John Ward, my cohort.
Good evening, everybody. I hope everybody's okay.
We've also got our resident Exodus Reality medium, Chris Conway.
Hi, guys.
And it's good to have you. And you know what? We just don't know where to go from there.
Yeah.
No.
It's been a phenomenal day, guys.
There is so much that we could tell you and share with you about the things we've been doing.
Yeah.
And we really wish that you all, and of course it's an impossibility mathematically speaking, but it would certainly be nice if you could all experience the things that we're experiencing here.
Well, some of the things.
Yeah. We did have a little mishap with the medium. Medium down.
We've got Mrs. Doubtfire in the building.
Yes. Well, our medium, Chris Conway, stumbled in an old 3,500-year-old cobblestone street, which, you know, you might think 3,500 years old, sand and weather and rain and erosion, that should be just as smooth as the day it was laid, right? No, it's full of divots and holes, and, well, Chris happened to hit one of the holes, turned his foot underneath him, snap, and there we thought that he was actually had a broken leg right above the ankle. He was all swelled up, and so he was laid up, and it only turns out to have been a sprain, very severe.
A little sprain.
Only. A plaster cast for 3 weeks.
Yes.
I can't put any weight on it.
I think it's a little bit extra.
The doctor said that it's the worst sprain he's ever seen in his life.
Yes, but he was a vet.
Of course.
He wasn't. He was a butcher.
He was a doctor in Edfu, which is the thriving metropolis of Edfu.
Yes.
Down on the Nile. Actually, up on the Nile, if you think north and south and the flow of the river. But we're in the south of Egypt at Edfu, south of Cairo. And we went to see this evening while Chris was actually contending with the armed orderlies and guards at the Edfu Hospital, which is a place I'd probably never want to go if I was seriously injured or sick.
Yeah, thanks for that, guys.
Sure. Chris, we're going to have these guys, these Egyptians, take you to the Edfu Hospital while we go see the temple.
Yeah.
And but we did go to the Temple of Horus, an amazing site here at Edfu. And we actually arrived on our Dahabeya, our Nile River boat, the Queen Tai, as she's named. We arrived a little too late to get into the ruins of the temple. And we had Dr. Ahmed Syed along, who is the inspector for Gebel El Silsila, which is John Ward and Dr. Maria Nilsson's site that they work. And he pulled a few strings with his networks and John's networks, and they actually reopened the temple just for our Exodus Reality Adventure group. And the 11 of us went in and were able to tour the temple. Dr. Syed gave some lecture along the way, and they had us sit down for their new light show. It was a light and multimedia show. Like none I have ever seen before. Imagine yourselves in a 3,000-year-old ruin of a massive temple, and you've got stereo music that's coming out that's just amazing orchestration.
The bass levels were just out as well.
It was like the sound was coming out of the sky. And they played, they had light show and video, you could say it's like a glorified slideshow up against the wall of the temple. Then they brought us inside to the inner courtyard, and all the pillars, the massive pillars reaching up probably 50 feet tall. There's all this light show going in and out throughout that, and then they started projecting against the pylon, the main wall of the temple, and took us outside. Then again, it moved outside and continued and ended out there. And it was spectacular. I would say John and I both had tears. This thing was so incredibly moving. And
powerful.
Powerful is the word.
Powerful is the word.
It ended, and our people all clapped, and all the workers were there who worked on the thing that stayed late for us. And we clapped, and I just said, outstanding. It's just outstanding. There was no other word for it.
It was a phenomenal experience.
And meanwhile, Chris was contending with the armed guards at the hospital, having his sprained ankle plaster casted.
Bless him.
We felt very bad that he couldn't be there, but not bad enough to have skipped it to make sure he was okay at the hospital.
Too true.
Yeah.
We knew you were going to be okay.
Thanks for that, guys.
You're welcome.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes. It's nice to know who your friends are when you're in times of trouble. And you leave me at the hands of machine gun carrying.
We knew you were
nurses.
Okay.
Hello, nurse.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
You're still alive.
He is still alive.
Yes.
And you still have an intact ankle. It hasn't been amputated.
No. It hasn't.
And you had an X-ray.
Well, now I will say this.
And you've got drugs.
We were trying to prepare Chris for the worst by telling him, Chris, you know, we've had this happen before. We're a medium. Will underturn his foot, and he had to have it amputated at the knee because it really just did so much damage. And the psychology here was, if we prepare him for amputation and he finds out it's only a break or a sprain, he's going to be doing flying on cloud nine.
And he'd sent it up, guys. John, to be fair, John was being very... For John, he's been very, very sympathetic, and no, he was actually a star. He was a star today. Until Nurse Roberts turned up, and the first thing he said was, "Oh, it's broken." He says, "I had a friend that happened to, and he had his leg cut off." Oh yes, it's definitely broken.
And pardon the coughing. We don't have a soundboard here, so we're just recording.
My diagnosis was correct from
you
the
were
outset.
You were spot.
Oh. My diagnosis was correct. Yeah. And, I said to Chris, I said, you know, I've seen this before.
First aid, you know.
I said, I've broken my leg before, just above the ankle, the very same way you've done it. And I said, I think it might be a break. And Chris is carted off to the hospital, and John slaps me on the shoulder, and he says, don't say it's broken, you're going to manifest that. And I said, what do you mean manifest? I know, I understand what manifest is. And John said, no, you must manifest that it is only sprained. And he says, and therefore it will not be broken. I said, well, why don't we just go ahead and manifest that it's totally healed and he grows a third leg? Let's manifest that too. And John said, that is not the way it works. And I said, now look, I said, if Chris broke his leg physically, physics, science, his leg is broken. No amount of manifestation I do will unbreak his leg. And John said, no, you've got it all wrong. And I looked at him and I said, I think you're talking about a different realm then.
And is his ankle broken?
Are you taking credit for his ankle?
Yes, I am.
Broken?
We manifested the healing properties and the manifestation that it is only a merely sprained ankle and not a broken one.
And mind you, the man you have here manifesting the healing of Chris's leg was all afternoon. Oh, 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 what are you complaining for? Oh, put that foot. Oh, it doesn't hurt. Oh, you tripped on a pebble. Oh, you can't walk. Oh, a medium who can't walk. Didn't you see that coming? And all afternoon. And Chris putting up with it with a good smile. And then, of course, he gets carted off to the hospital. And John's like, oh, well, we must manifest that his leg will be healed. And it's like, yeah, you did a great job of bedside manifesting all afternoon. So there. Suffice it to say, Chris is doing much better tonight.
Yes.
He did get pharaonic treatment, though. They carried him down the stairs on the wharf and then up the gangplank, and they carried him up the stairway to the upper deck here and set him down in a chair.
Do you know how he actually got to the hospital?
How did he get to the hospital?
A horse and cart.
Really? He got the horse and cart treatment?
He got the horse and cart treatment.
Oh,
and after
nice.
Having the cast placed on him, how did he get away from the hospital?
On
the horse and cart.
Horse and cart.
Without crutches.
Without crutches.
They carried me to the horse and cart, threw me in the horse and cart, and then says, go to the pharmacy for your crutches.
And then he went to the pharmacy to purchase a set of crutches.
And they gave me one crutch,
which
I fell because I couldn't balance. So
folks, all I have to say is, Egypt. So,
we've had it actually.
So far, I will say this. So far, our our track record for mediums on the Exodus Reality Adventure, not good.
Not good.
Yeah. One medium down.
Yes.
So,
yes.
He's doing better. He's with us now.
Smiling as always.
He'll be hobbling to the next site with us tomorrow, which is Gebel El Silsila.
It is indeed.
What, again, remind our listeners, what is Gebel El Silsila?
It's the largest ancient sandstone quarry left in Egypt today.
Now, before you go, quarry, that's exciting. Let John tell you, this is the site that John and Dr. Maria Nilsson work. And the symbolism that comes out of there, the finds that they have found. How is that for profundity? The finds that they have found there,
profundity.
That's my profundity. It's a word. Look it up.
Are you taking Chris's drugs?
No, Chris is drugged up. Not I. I am coffeed up. Profundity is a word. Folks, you look it up and you write us and let us know. Profundity is a word.
Never play Scrabble with Scotty because he comes up with some great words which don't exist.
Profundity, and it's on a three-word score.
Yes.
Anyway.
Triple-word score.
Gebel El Silsila, the most ancient sandstone quarries of Egypt, have provided all the stone for Esna, which we visited this morning, which you neglected to mention to our audience.
I hadn't gotten to it yet.
You were procrastinating.
I just hadn't gotten there.
You were talking about manifestation for some reason.
Oh, manifestation this, manifestation that. Now, manifest this.
That was obscene, wasn't it? You're not a nice man.
Oh, it's a good thing we aren't on video broadcasting.
So, Esna, can you remember it this morning?
I do remember it this morning.
What was the most significant thing about Esna Temple?
Esna Temple, what was the most significant thing about it? I think it was walking through the souk to get there. The common folk of the town. Boy, that sounded very,
yes,
very snootish. I didn't mean it to sound that way.
Scotty, you're turning into John.
I think John just exhaled his coffee through his nostrils. So those pipes are clean. But walking through the souk, the experience there, I think it was the massive pillars that were professionalism, John. John has his head planted on the table and his shawl over his head. That's his shawl, folks. Esna Temple, it's in the middle of the city, and it's like a big hole in the ground. You go down relatively about three flights of stairs to get to the bottom.
A very big hole in the ground.
And the pillars were amazing inside this place. One thing that we did notice is that the hieroglyphs, because this is a little later period, are not as refined as some of the older hieroglyphs in, say, Old Kingdom and Middle Kingdom. And so this was a really impressive architecture. The pillars, however, were massive. I would say you've got a good 12 feet around these pillars in circumference. And they extend 50, 60 feet tall. And it was to replicate like a papyrus forest or a palm forest out of massive stone. And there was hieroglyph and inscription on every single surface. The ceilings, the walls, except the floor, there wasn't hieroglyph. There were...
Just divots.
Yes.
And so it was an amazing place.
Did you actually notice the ceiling?
I did notice the ceiling. And I did notice where they were doing restoration work.
Oh, the restoration work. That was amazing. I was actually waiting for Ahmed Sayed to actually say, John, feel free, climb the ladder and go and have a look. But that never manifested. I was quite upset about that. I was trying to manifest it, but
you should have manifested that.
I tried.
It didn't happen.
It didn't happen. I failed. But, having said that, it was amazing to see it from the ground level.
It was.
They're doing some phenomenal work. Same as the
color is amazing.
Oh, it's just as if it's
You know, you
done
look
yesterday.
At these walls and they look very browned and blackened and with age, but the chemicals they use to restore them, it takes that browning and blackening off, and these brilliant colors and pigments stand right out. It's
well, you
got to
remember that
work.
You got to remember that part, that particular temple we went to today was buried beneath the city. I mean, you know, it's quite hard.
That's why it's in a big hole in the ground.
Well, that's it, but it's quite hard to kind of imagine that for our audience. I mean, you walk up the souk amongst the common people.
Sorry, common folk.
Common folk. And then you have this kind of banister that surrounds this pit, which the temple sits in. And it, you know, it's not a small temple by any means.
No, it's not. It's massive.
But you know, as we were walking around ourselves, when we were walking around the rear of the temple and so forth, one can easily imagine what lays beneath the rest of the city.
And that's the point that we were discussing on the site there, is if this was all underground and just the tip top of it was peeking above the ground, then wasn't this a place where there were houses that had just been built up over the centuries on top of this? And they completely unearthed this temple.
But what you've got to remember is that that temple was built by the Roman Greco-Roman
period, under the Ptolemies.
So what's beneath that?
That is another interesting question.
You see, you know, you look at this and you think, well, okay, if the Roman period came to an end, what, around about
300 AD.
It's less than 2,000 years that it took to bury it. It was uncovered and excavated in the late 19th century.
Yes.
And so how long did it take to bury what was beneath it?
That's the big question.
You know, so and the same goes for Edfu, where we're at Edfu today. I mean, that is just absolutely monumental edifice.
Yes.
Huge. But that was completely buried.
And I think that's what was impressive about it, because you're walking through the souk. It's really, it looks like a very impoverished part of town with all the little shops. And right in the midst of all that is the hole in the ground with this huge temple. And so, and they've cleared out the huge compound, so it actually looks like you're just going down into a stadium almost, and there's this big temple.
But did you notice also that within the grounds of that compound, you've got the basilica?
Yes.
So you've actually got a church. So now that really starts to add to the question, how does a temple and a church become buried so quickly? Is it just accumulation of rubbish and debris? And if it is, how many people does it take to accumulate that amount of rubbish and debris to bury an entire temple?
Is this a question like how many ancient Egyptians does it take to screw in a light bulb?
No.
Oh, all right.
It was a serious question.
A serious question. So what's your answer?
I don't have one.
Oh, nobody does. That's the point.
That is the point. I mean, you know, you look at Edfu and that was completely buried. I mean, Edfu is it's massive.
Yes, and we'll keep emphasizing that point as to how big it is. So that was some of the outstanding things about Esna today. Then we hop back on board. We've been living on the boat now for 2 days.
Yeah,
our Dahabeya, the Queen Tai, and we are who was the wife of
Amenhotep
III, who is John's pharaoh of the Exodus. And I say John's pharaoh because there's no definitive proof that he was the pharaoh of the Exodus. If there was, there would only be one theory in our book. So, Tai. No, don't even get into the evidence. Evidence found that there was some departure between, falling out of favor between John's candidate for Moses, Hapu, and Amenhotep III. But
I wasn't going to mention it, but
did.
You seem to harp on about this as if it's grating upon you.
You were like a gleeful little schoolgirl jumping up and down and dancing a jig when you were relating this news to me, which is just new news over the last couple of days. And my point is, and how does this prove that Amenhotep, son of Hapu, was Moses?
Unfortunately, we don't have enough time because this is only a 30-minute segment.
He fell out of favor with the pharaoh. Oh, that's unique in history. So
I have nothing
anyway,
to say. I am
moving
to
along.
Moving along swiftly.
So we're going to Gebel El Silsila tomorrow.
We are, and we're going to have a fantastic time there. We've got a surprise in the evening.
What is this surprise, John?
I can't tell you.
He won't tell me. John is my business partner in this effort, and he won't even tell me what the surprise is.
Were you, or as we've mentioned, I believe in yesterday's 30-minute segment, because you keep on harping on about these surprises, but were you or were you not surprised at Serabit El Khadim?
I was surprised.
Were you elated?
I was elated.
Well, there you go. So
and
do you need to know?
For those of you who may have missed that segment, we climbed the mountain Serabit El Khadim out in the Sinai wilderness, and there, as we walked across the plateau toward the Temple of Hathor, the 4,000 approximately year old Temple of Hathor, there is a table and chairs all set up with almost white linen service, fine china, full silver service, and meal. At the top of the mountain for all of our guests here on Exodus Reality Adventures, and all of this was Sherpa'd up the mountain path local Bedouins and their camels. And so the camels were out grazing, and the table and the dinner was all set up at the top of the mountain.
And what a wonderful surprise that
and
was.
And what a wonderful surprise that
so
was.
So if I tell you what the surprise is tomorrow night, you're going to be deflated. You'll know about it. You'll know it's coming.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Cool.
We'll go with that.
So tomorrow, we've got...
I do want to say, there is a famous Egyptologist out there, somebody who is formerly of high fame, who degraded our trip up Serabit El Khedim.
He did somehow.
Saying we didn't rough it, obviously didn't rough it, and it obviously wasn't that hard a climb if we had, you know, silver service up at the top and dinner. I will tell you, that ask those Bedouin if it was difficult carrying up tables and chairs and fine china and food on the backs of camels. And we did walk up the front side of the mountain, but we climbed down the back side, which was sometimes on very narrow cliff edges, helping some of our people.
It was a mountain goat pass.
It was mountain goat pass. Anyway, moving on.
So tomorrow, we are under strict instructions that we are not allowed to disembark the boat before Dr. Maria Nilsson turns up.
Oh, yes, Dr. Maria Nilsson.
I'm under pain of death. I am not allowed to step foot on the west bank of Sicily.
Well,
She wishes to lead the group. So
oh,
she said,
very nice.
Along so with
that, in all in and of itself, is a surprise to have Dr. Maria Nilsson leading our group tomorrow through Sicily.
So hopefully we're going to have time. Well, we're going to have plenty of time. We've got the whole day there. So we're going to explore and investigate all of the cenotaphs, and you'll be able to show them that little cenotaph. What was the name of the person?
Senenmut.
Senenmut. Yes.
Yes.
Can you remember which cenotaph it is, or do I have to remind you?
Number 16.
Oh, well done.
Number 16. Okay. We thought it was number 17 last
we
year
did.
At first.
Yes.
We took pictures of 16, moved on to 17. Now, a cenotaph is like looks like a tomb in the wall of the cliff alongside the Nile, and above the Nile waters. And so we looked at 16 and went, it's nice, ha-ha. And we moved on to 17. Ah, Senenmut. But we could find no proof in there that it was Senenmut.
Bit like your theory.
We saw a partial name etched in the wall, but it didn't have all the same features of Senenmut.
No, it didn't, actually.
So we didn't really know who it was. And we found out later, they were digging in
the wrong place.
And so...
Bad date.
And so Cenotaph 16 is Senenmut, and it was actually wiped completely clean. There was a statue seated in the niche in the back, and all the facial features and every feature of the statue was hacked away, and you could tell it was a seated figure that used to have a front piece on it. That's all you could tell. And everything else on the walls was wiped clean.
By the hand of God.
Wiped clean by the hand of God. Or by, more likely, by Amenhotep II, the real pharaoh of the Exodus.
Yes.
And because Senenmut, well, we won't get into that, but why would he wipe out all the images of Senenmut?
Here we go.
You just you play with that one in your mind for a while.
Yes, if you really want to. So, we will be at Gebel al-Sisila. We'll have the surprise in the evening. And then the next day, we'll be moving onwards, and we'll be moving down towards Komombo.
Yes, we will.
But we'll be doing the live 30-minute segment tomorrow from... I think we should do it actually outside the Speos of Horenheb. That will be
an amazing place to do it.
It'll
be on the West Bank.
Yeah.
And Pharaoh Horemheb, look it up, and you'll see a little bit more about him before tomorrow night's segment.
And we've got Chris Conway with us.
Chris Conway will
he'll
be
able, he'll be able to leave the boat tomorrow with his... With his plaster cast.
I know, crutches.
He has crutches.
This is going to be an amazing photographic opportunity to watch Chris Conway on crutches traversing sand dunes.
I like that. I rather like it.
Can you imagine what was going to happen to a crutch?
Yes.
In
I want to see how he's going to handle jumping from the open air cenotaph over to the cliff where Cenotaph 16 is.
I just want to see him in sand.
Oh,
I want to see how it's not going to sink.
I have you guys to carry me like a pharaoh.
No, we will not be carrying you like a pharaoh. We'll just leave you.
You can't do that.
We can get some common people to do that.
Oh, you are so bad.
I am.
So, and the rest?
The rest of?
Today.
Today.
What else happened? 6 hours of glorious sunshine,
basking
on the deck of the Dahabir as we majestically sailed down the Nile.
There was nothing like getting away from, first of all, getting away from everything that you're used to being all tied up with every day of the year.
Yeah.
But also the hustle and the bustle and the overt, overpopulated busyness of Cairo. And now we've been on this boat, and for literally just 6 hours today in between temples, we're just floating up the Nile.
It was just wonderful. The wildlife.
The sun was out. We had this morning, while we were doing our own radio broadcast for Intrepid Radio, the sun was just peeking over the eastern horizon across the Nile from us as we're floating up the river. And the sun came out, and we saw a flock of ibis flying across low above the water in front of the boat. We heard birds singing. It was just a glorious, glorious afternoon.
It was.
Morning and afternoon here. And it was, I fell asleep in the sunshine.
I fell asleep on my chaise longue.
Yeah, yes, yes. John has the presidential cabin at the back end of the boat.
Of course, with my own private sun deck.
In the aft.
With my own private sun
deck. With his own private sun deck.
You're in steerage.
Now, keep in mind, when we're talking about this, this isn't a modern boat. This boat's about 100 to 120 years old. This is a boat that was used in the Victorian era, the Edwardian era. All the woodwork is just beautiful in this boat. And so John is in the big stateroom with the big four-polster wood-carved bed and the chaise lounge over in the corner where he... they used to call those fainting lounges. And I think John was so fagged for the day.
You can't use that word.
I can use that word.
You can't use the
it's
word.
It's a word. Must I lapse into profundity about what is politically correct and what is not?
Is that really a word? Profundity.
Profundity.
Profundity is a word.
We question you on this.
Yes, we do.
Thankfully, we've only got 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes left.
3.5 minutes left.
3.5 minutes. So
yes.
I fell asleep on my chaise longue.
You fainted.
Are just jealous because you are in
steerage.
He swooned.
Oh,
and he came staggering up the stairs about 3 hours later and says, "How long have I been sleeping?" And
how long have I been sleeping?
Says,
"Where
least,
am I?"
At least 2 hours, maybe three. I have not. I've been down
I
for 10
not.
Minutes.
John is a denialist.
Yes.
I ask him what state he lives in. He says, "The state of denial." And traveling up denial on a boat. And so sorry for the bad puns. But that was this afternoon. But it was a glorious day here. We wish you could all be here. And of course, a numbers game, you can't. Oh, we hear a train over on the bank of the Nile.
By the way, guys, if what you can hear in that background, that screeching noise, is actually the rudder.
Yeah.
We've got the staff, the crew, I should say, sorry,
yeah.
Correctly. The crew of the boat busily working away, steering the boat as we're being pulled along the River Nile.
And we're being tugboated up the Nile because, as you know, the Nile flows north into the Mediterranean, so going downstream, we would be heading north to the Mediterranean, but we're going upstream against the current, and so when there is no wind for the sails, there are two masts on this boat, in the fore and the aft, and when there's not enough wind to propel the boat by sail, they tug it up the river.
Plus, we've got the time issue. We've actually got it takes 6 hours to get from Edfu to Gebel El Silsila.
Yes, so we'll be mooring at Gebel El Silsila sometime in the middle of the night.
No, I think we'll probably stop halfway.
I'll stop.
And then we'll do the rest. Oh, we're gonna
that's what we're going to do.
Well, that's what we're going to do.
We're getting the high sign from Little Mo. Little Mo, say hello to everyone.
Come on, Little Mo.
Hello,
come
everyone.
Excellent, Mo. Thank you.
All okay.
Much. Everybody's
give,
okay.
Give them an Egyptian greeting.
Ahlan wa sahlan bikum. Marhab, marhab.
Excellent.
What he said. All right, folks, and for tonight, that will be John Ward and I signing off. We're going to be back tomorrow with another 30-minute update from the Exodus Reality Adventure. Remember, you can find out all about us at exodusreality.com. You can actually buy tickets for the next trip, which is October 13th through the 25th of this year, and you can join us on the same trip with so much more going to be added to this trip.
Oh, it's going to be phenomenal.
Phenomenal. And then listen for our live show, Intrepid Radio, every Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on KGRA Digital Radio Broadcasting.